got a sprain or an itch, pain, rash, swelling, or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. I call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. Close your eyes and think. Do you remember where you were and what you saw when the terrorist attack of 9/11 occurred? Or maybe you're older and you can remember the same facts about President John F. Kennedy's assassination in Dallas, Texas. Perhaps you were even there when one of these major events took place. Or how about your high school graduation, your first school dance, your first date, the first time you hit a home run, or the first time you took first place in some tournament?
How much do you really remember? And are those memories accurate? You might think so. But many memories that we are sure are correct end up being quite inaccurate.
Like the young girl who remembers being seated at work looking out the window of the office and seeing the smoke billowing down Long Island Sound after the 9/11 debacle. The problem here was she was actually nowhere near that area. Her office window did not face Long Island Sound and was 40 miles away from the area in Manhattan where the attack took place.
She was not simply lying. She truly believed, or should I say, misremembered the facts. This is not an unusual occurrence. In fact, many of our memories, especially older ones that we believe were true and accurate, were actually inaccurate or downright false.
Why is that? This has been seen time and time again with witnesses to a crime where the witness truly believed that they saw something or someone, later to be told that the memory was simply incorrect.
You may think that there is one small place where memories are stored in the brain, but this is not true. There are many areas involved in memory, both long-term and short-term memories.
Sound may be stored in the auditory cortex, just behind the frontal lobe of the brain. Feelings of your fingers on an object somewhere behind the parietal area of the brain, people's faces, stores below the auditory complex, nervousness and anxiety in the area called the amygdala.
Then there is an area called the medial temporal lobe that contains the amygdala and the hippocampus that links all the parts of memory from the areas that we just mentioned.
So later in life, when you begin to remember an event, it is this area that includes the hippocampus that brings that memory back into focus.
We usually retain only a few small memories from early childhood, and usually none before the age of 3. But there is a spike in memories around our teenage years and early adulthood, since this is a time in our lives when more important events occur, such as graduation, our first job, maybe marriage, and even childbirth.
What most of us want to do is improve our memories. Well, good nutrition, plenty of sleep actually do help. One that may surprise you is the effect that meditation actually has on your memory.
It really works to help your memory. The same goes for mindfulness training, which Dr. Lasky and I have talked about on so many shows previously.
Graduates were shown to significantly increase their scores on the verbal GRE tests after just one mindfulness training session.
If you are looking for other ways to improve your memory, let us start with emotion. When we look at a string of pictures of faces, the ones that we remember best are the ones that show most emotion, such as scowling, grinning, and laughing. Even the grotesque faces that we can put on.
In London, there's a test for local cab drivers to show their knowledge of the more than 2,500 London streets. In those who passed the tests, the hippocampus grew significantly as compared to the size of the hippocampus prior to the test. Those that did not pass the test had hippocampuses that grew very little or not at all.
If you listen to a list of words, you will do much better if it list is in the form of a story. For example, let us say that the first 5 items in the list are wolf, strawberries, Empire State Building, moon, and scissors.
You would be better creating a ridiculous story that intertwines these words, such as picturing a howling wolf walking on strawberries that are squishing between his paws while jumping over the Empire State Building and finally landing on the moon covered with thousands of scissors. The more ridiculous and vivid the story, the more likely you are to remember it.
Again, picture a howling wolf walking on red strawberries that are squishing loudly between his paws while jumping over the Empire State Building in a single bound and finally landing on the moon, covered with millions of scissors.
I would almost bet that you can now repeat the list easily both backwards and forwards. Try it yourself right now, and maybe try it yourself later and see how much you retain of that story. Again, I bet that it's really a lot.
In fact, many memory magicians or memory experts use this thinking form to remember huge lists of items, numbers, addresses, or any other things.
There's also a technique called the memory palace, where you take something that you are very familiar with, such as the things in your home. Picture yourself walking into your home.
As you open the door, you may see a small table and a clothes closet. Then, as you continue your walk through your home, maybe you come to your kitchen, you see your stove, possibly a toaster, a microwave, a refrigerator, and then a kitchen table.
The trick is now to link the list to these objects in the rooms to the objects in the list. In that way, you have an automatic route that helps link everything. I remember, for example, the first book that I read on memory, written by a well-known magician and memory expert named Harry Lorraine. It's called The Memory Book, and it was co-authored with someone named Jerry Lucas. Now, if you're old enough, you may remember that Jerry Lucas was a professional basketball player. In fact, he was an NBA All-Star in 1965, but he had another claim to fame. First of all, he was a straight-A student at college who was really good at memorizing. He'd actually memorized every move in the 21-game chess match called the Game of the Century between the American Bobby Fischer and the Russian Boris Spassky.
At one time, after the Knicks game, Lucas met Fischer at a party and stated that he had memorized the phone numbers in the first column of the first 70 pages of the Manhattan telephone directory.
Fischer claimed that it was impossible, so Jerry told him to randomly pick any name in the first 70 pages of the telephone book and look at the first column on each page and pick a number and tell him how many names down from the top of the selected page it is. And Lucas said, "I'll tell you the telephone number."
Fischer selected page 49 and scrolled down with his index finger to the 52nd name. Lucas replied 5813211, which was the exact number.
Two of the systems that memory experts used are called the link and peg systems, both of which we sort of went over a few moments ago.
So, how do we make memories? This includes the ability not only to create the new memories, but to store, retain, and then recall them.
Consider for a moment how many times a day you rely on your memory to help you function. You get up in the morning and remember that you're in your bed. You then remember where the bathroom is. Possibly you then remember that you have to eat breakfast, or you remember where the kitchen is, where the bread and the cheese, the eggs, the stove, the fork and spoons, and then you remember how to use them all.
Maybe then you easily find your keys because you remember where you put them, so you grab them, go to your car, which you happen to remember is parked in your garage, and drive to work. You also remember where work is and how to get there. You remember not to speed and how to drive your car safely.
Etc., etc., etc. You may even need to remember your passwords, as you remember how to use your computer. Need money? You need to remember your bank account or where to find it on the internet. Well, it's time for our mid-show break. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky with Carmen Lasky, and this is Hey Doc. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
The study of human memory has been a subject of science and philosophy for thousands of years and has become one of the major topics of interest within cognitive psychology. If you have a memory trick that you use, tell us. You can call us at Southside Medical Center at 904-641-4411.
We've already said that memory is a complex process that involves acquiring, storing, and recalling information, but not all memories are the same. So human memories involve the ability to both preserve and recover information we've learned or experienced.
As we all know, however, memory is not flawless. Sometimes we forget or misremember things. Sometimes things are not properly encoded in memory in the first place.
Memory problems can range from minor annoyances like forgetting where you left your car keys to major diseases that affect the quality of life and the ability to function.
In order to form new memories, information must be changed into usable form, which occurs through the process known as encoding.
Once the information has been successfully encoded, it must be stored in memory for later use. Now, much of this stored memory lies outside of our awareness most of the time, except when we actually need to use it.
The retrieval process allows us to bring stored memories into conscious awareness. As I am sure that you realize, some memories are very brief, just seconds long, and allow us to take in sensory information about the world around us.
Short-term memories are a bit longer and last about 20 to 30 seconds. These memories mostly consist of the information we are currently focusing on and thinking about. Now, finally, some memories are capable of enduring much longer, lasting days, weeks, months, or even decades.
Most of these long-term memories lie outside of our immediate awareness, but we can draw them into consciousness when they are needed. To use the information that has been encoded into memory, it first has to be retrieved.
There are diseases that affect our creating memories, diseases that affect storage, and many disease processes that can influence how memories are retrieved. This includes the type of information being used and the retrieval cues that are present. Have you ever felt like you had the answer to a question right at the tip of your tongue, but you couldn't quite remember it? Now, this is an example of a perplexing memory retrieval problem known as lethologica, or tip-of-the-tongue phenomenon.
The stage model of memory is often used to explain the basic structure and function of memory. This theory outlines three separate stages of memory: sensory memory, short-term memory, and long-term memory.
This is the theory that we briefly mentioned with the brief short-term and long-term types of memory.
Short-term memory is also known as active memory. It is the information we are currently thinking about. It may also be called the conscious mind. Most of the information stored in active memory will be kept for approximately 20 to 30 seconds.
Long-term memory refers to the continuing storage of information. It's also called preconscious and unconscious. The ability to access and retrieve information from long-term memory allows us to actually use these memories to make decisions, interact with others, and, of course, solve problems. We do know that these memories are arranged or clustered in groups in the brain.
Information that is categorized becomes easier to remember and recall. For example, consider the following group of words: desk, apple, bookshelf, red plum, table, green, pineapple, purple, chair, peach, yellow.
Spend a few seconds reading them, then look away and try to recall and list these words. How did you group the words when you listed them? Most people will list using three different categories: color, furniture, and fruit. Then there's the semantic network model. This model suggests that certain triggers activate associated memories.
A memory of a specific place might activate memories about related things that have occurred in that location. For example, thinking about a particular school building My trigger memories of attending classes, studying, and socializing with fellow students.
But the question is, what happens when memory fails? As we get older, we also think about this. Forgetting can happen for a number of reasons, including a failure to retrieve the information from long-term memory.
Research has shown that one of the critical factors that influences memory failure is time. Information is often quickly forgotten, particularly if people do not actively review and rehearse the information.
There are four basic explanations for why forgetting occurs: retrieval failures, interference failure to store, and motivated forgetting.
Sometimes information is simply lost from memory, and in other cases, it was never stored correctly in the first place.
Want to remember someone's name that you just met? Instead of just saying the standard greeting, "Hello, how are you?" you could say something like this: "Hello, Mr. Jones. Very nice to meet you, John." And that way you've repeated the names out loud to yourself, as well as to the person to whom you are speaking.
Sometimes memories compete with one another, making it difficult to remember certain information. In still other instances, people actively try to forget things that they simply don't want to remember.
Has this ever happened to you? While in a conversation, the other person rattles off a phone number and you make a quick mental note. Moments later, you realize that you have already forgotten the number.
You can increase the duration of short-term memories to an extent by using rehearsal strategies such as saying the information aloud or mentally repeating it.
You can use the same idea of repeating it out loud to try to remember it. However, information in short-term memory is also highly susceptible to interference. Any new information that enters short-term memory will quickly displace any old memory information. Similar items in the environment can also interfere with short-term memories.
While many of our short-term memories are quickly forgotten, attending to this information allows it to continue the next stage, long-term memory.
The amount of information that can be stored in short-term memory can vary. Most feel that this is around 7 items. You may have heard the term working memory and thought that this is the same as short-term memory, but there is a distinction. Carmen's going to tell us about that.
Working memories refers to the processes that are used to temporarily store, organize, and manipulate information, while short-term memory refers only to the temporary storage of information in memory.
There's also something called the three-store model to conceptualize human memory. Carmen, what is that exactly?
This model suggests that memory consists of three basic stores: sensory, short-term, and long-term, and that each of these can be distinguished based on storage capacity and duration.
While long-term memory has a seemingly unlimited capacity that lasts years, short-term memory is really pretty brief and limited. Chunking information into small groups makes it easier to remember more items for a short period.
The information processing view of memory suggests that human memory works much like a computer.
In this particular model, information first enters short-term memory, and then some of this information is transferred into long-term memory, just like information on a computer being placed on a hard disk.
As we mentioned earlier, chunking is one memorization technique that can facilitate the transfer of information into long-term memory. This approach involves breaking up information into smaller segments. If you were trying to memorize a string of numbers, for example, you would segment them off into 3 or 4 item blocks.
Rehearsal can also help information make it into long-term memory. You might use this approach when studying materials for an examination. Instead of just reviewing the information once or twice, you might go over your notes over and over and over again until the critical information is committed to memory.
The classic model, known as the Atkinson-Shiffrin model or multimodal model, suggests that all short-term memories are automatically placed in long-term memory after a certain amount of time.
Now, other researchers have proposed that some mental editing does take place and that only particular memories are selected for long-term retention. There is, however, another theory that says that there are separate stores for short-term and long-term memories. Just as you can exercise your leg muscles to run longer and faster, exercise may actually help increase short-term memory.
One experiment found that treadmill exercise in rats with Alzheimer's led to improvements in short-term memory by increasing neurogenesis, offering hope for new approaches that alleviate some of the symptoms associated with Alzheimer's disease.
Now, we really do not want to end our discussion on memory with so much more to cover, but we'd like to continue it on the next show as we have another important piece of information that we feel really could be of interest to many of you. There is a newly discovered immune cell linked to type 1 diabetes.
Computer simulation demonstrated the extremely tight binding to an immune system cell of a peptide produced by the newly discovered X lymphocyte.
The protein may direct the mistaken destruction of healthy insulin-producing cells in the pancreas and in turn cause type 1 diabetes. This autoimmune response is 10 times stronger than that seen with a weaker binding lab-engineered insulin that is in itself 1,000 times more immune-stimulating than normal insulin. The research team from Johns Hopkins Medicine, IBM Research, and four collaborating institutions is the first to document the existence of the long-doubted X cell, a rogue hybrid immune system cell that may play a key role in the development of type 1 diabetes.
The researchers reported finding the unusual white blood cell, which is a hybrid between the B and T lymphocytes of the adaptive immune system.
Not only does the research show that the X cell exists, but that there is strong evidence for it being a major driver of the autoimmune response believed to cause type 1 diabetes. Now, as many of you know, type 1 diabetes is a chronic condition in which there is destruction of the beta cells in the pancreas that produce insulin, the hormone that regulates a person's blood sugar level. Without insulin, blood sugar production is out of control.
The B cell receptor, or BCR, and T cell receptor, or TCR, respectively work together to help identify and target antigens. These are the bacteria, viruses, and other foreign invaders that trigger an immune response.
Normally, this defense begins when the trespasser is engulfed by a white blood cell called an antigen-presenting cell. Let's call that APC. After this occurs, the APC travels to a part of the body, such as a lymph node, where the immature B and T cells reside. A T cell with a TCR whose shape conforms to the presented antigen, akin to fitting a key into a lock, can latch on, triggering its maturation into either a helper or a killer T cell.
Helper T cells then activate immature B cells. The killer or cytotoxic T cells, on the other hand, directly attack the invaders to which they have been primed. As a result of the immature T cells' initial contacts with the antigen.
However, when the process goes haywire, with the B cells and T cells seeking out and attacking normal cells, the case of mistaken identity, known as an autoimmune response, well, with that, the results can just be devastating. Perhaps the most intriguing part of the X cell story is that the researchers found DE lymphocytes and the XID peptide more frequently in the blood of type 1 diabetics than in healthy non-diabetic patients. More to come on this and the continuing story of memory on next week's show. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.